is actually just to give you a whereabouts where you are on the calendar. This is the week before the week that the high holidays begin. So next Wednesday night, not this Wednesday night, but next Wednesday night will be Erev Rosh Hashanah. We have Erev Rosh Hashanah services here, of course. And then we're going to have a meal afterwards, I think. At least that's what's on the schedule. I don't do the cooking, so I can't guarantee that. But I believe that we're going to have a meal afterwards. And of course, everybody should come. And it'll be a fun time. That's Wednesday night. And then...
RSVP.
Yeah, it's an RSVP meal, that's right. Yeah. That's correct. It's an RSVP meal because we have to know how many to cook for, right? All right, so along the same lines of thought, since we have the holidays coming up, we're going to take a break from this class now. We're finishing up our 10th week of the class, of the Romans class here, and we'll resume with God's help on the 17th of November. The 17th of November is a Monday night. So we'll stick with the Monday night schedule. And I'm not sure if we will have classes all the way through, straight through then. I don't know exactly how the holidays are going to fall when we get into December, but I think we'll be okay to just run another 10 weeks through around to the end of January or something like that.
What's the date, November?
November 17th.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so to review what we've covered so far, the argument so far of the epistle to the believers in Rome, just briefly, we remember that Paul was addressing a congregation that had some division on the lines of the Jew-Gentile question. It wasn't one of his congregations, so this was still an open issue in Rome. But nevertheless, Paul had colleagues, workers, a lot of contacts there in Rome. And he hoped himself to follow up and to be traveling there soon. And so he's making a defense of his particular slant on the gospel as he addresses it, as he sends this epistle. And especially how that gospel plays out on the ground in Rome in a community that's composed of both Jewish people and Gentile, God-fearing Gentile believers. And so he makes the argument saying, look, you know, God is the God of the whole world. He's not just the God of the Jewish people. So we have to acknowledge that if Gentiles, God-fearing Gentiles, these Gentiles are keeping the Torah and they're living lives of faith and righteousness. You know, even if they're uncircumcised, that is, if they're not Jewish, isn't Hashem going to count that as if they, you know, are, you know, if they're living the Torah, right? And you remember how he's posing this argument in the first chapters. But then he took it to some very mystical levels very quickly. Because for a Jewish person, it's easy to understand the mission of Messiah. Messiah is about redeeming Israel. The Messiah is coming to redeem Israel. What does Messiah mean to Gentiles? All right. Well, Paul says, okay, look, there's another exile and redemption, a larger exile and redemption that the Messiah is bringing about. And so he speaks about Adam and Eve and the exile from Eden. And so he ratchets it up. Says, in fact, the Messiah is a type of Adam is a type of the Messiah. He's the imprint of the Messiah. Adam was made in the image of the Messiah. So he went up to this level of it's not just about the nation of Israel. It's about the redemption of the whole world. And even he was still working that theme into what we were studying last week when he was talking about, and the resurrection from the dead. The whole creation's waiting for the resurrection from the dead, for the sons of God to be revealed, because the whole creation is going to undergo a resurrection as the world to come. This is some of what we were learning. But remember, there was the objection he had to deal with on his way. The objection he had to deal with was, okay, Paul, if you're telling us that these Gentiles don't need to become Jewish, they're not under the law, well, then why don't they just sin and sin freely so that grace may increase? You know, they can do whatever they jolly well please, I guess. You know, that sort of argument. And he had to answer that argument, and he spent several chapters doing that along the way. And he gave us the metaphor of of the slave and the owner of the slave, and the metaphor of the marriage and the woman who's married to one husband and then to another husband. And he's saying, look, you're no longer a slave to sin. You're no longer under the law of sin and death. You're no longer you're no longer the husband of the flesh, but now a husband to the Spirit. And by these sorts of arguments, he brought us to the point of understanding that the whole gist of this faith, of this hope, he calls it, this hope that we've taken hold of, is the resurrection of the dead. This is what it's based on, and it's going to be this experience that transforms us from flesh, you know, from this body of death, as he calls it, that's ruled by sin, to this this spiritual being. And that's where we were. That's kind of where we were. That's where we were last week when we broke off in the middle of Romans chapter 8, right? Sound familiar? Good. Good. Because, I mean, that's it. I mean, then we have to take a break. And you had to have that down, because now we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll be starting Romans 9, and we won't remember any of that. It'll all be confusing again. So, good. Okay.